What were you thinking about just before joining the interview?
I just really work, yeah. We have a young Indigenous gentleman going through an interview process, and I was reflecting on the differences in managing an Indigenous staff member versus a non-Indigenous staff member and supporting people through that.
Yeah. And where were you?
I was in the building next door.
And what was the main thing that you were doing?
Just work. Yeah.
How, work. How well were you concentrating?
I think quite well. I imagine 80%. Yeah.
And was it hard to concentrate?
No, it was fine.
How self-conscious were you?
I think I was pretty confident. Yeah, I think I work in quite a noisy area. Mm-hmm. And if I have trouble concentrating, I'll take it off the floor, take myself off the floor, or I'll put in my headphones. So I would say I was fully immersed in the problem and not worried about myself.
Okay, and did you feel good about yourself?
Yeah, well, felt good about the solution. Yeah.
Were you in control of the solution?
Yes.
Were you living up to your own expectations?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm very lucky to be in a job that helps me live my purpose and my values. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And were you living up to the expectations of your own expectations?
Yes.
Were you living up to the expectations of others?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, here, you can describe your mood. Mm-hmm. Like it could be alert to sad.
Yeah.
And you could choose whatever, very quiet, some, neither, and then again the side.
Yeah.
So whichever. So from alert to sad, and just tick.
Okay. Right. So I say very alert, quite happy, not irritable, irritable or cheerful. Say quite cheerful, strong or weak, quite strong. Lonely versus sociable is interesting because I'm not really a sociable person, but I don't see the opposite of that as lonely, so I'll just put in the middle.
Yep.
Ashamed or proud, quite proud, involved, detached, quite involved, excited, bored, very excited, closed, open, kind of in the middle. Okay. Clear or confused, very clear. Tense or relaxed, somewhere in the middle. Competitive or cooperating, over the side.
Great, that will be available.
Right.
Okay. So now we begin with the questions. And tell me about how you started meditating.
My meditation experience goes back to primary school. My primary school teacher taught us how to meditate. And then, having more kind of formal training, I completed my first Vipassana retreat when I was 21. I'm 42 now. So, I think my primary school teacher was my grade 7, so from 12 to 21, and then 21 to 42 would be kind of a short journey.
Short journey indeed. All right, so now what kind of meditation are you practicing? Like you said, you had at the age of 21 you did a Vipassana.
Yep.
What are you practicing now?
Well, I still use the Vipassana technique, so Anapana, Vipassana, Metapana, and they're just as needed. And then I use like a movement meditation for myself, again as needed. And I tend to, it's kind of a cross between meditation and prayer as a dedication every morning. So at least 5, sometimes 10 minutes, I'll at least wake up, meditate or pray, and meditate and pray.
Okay, so is that the only time that you actually dedicate to meditation, or do you do it in snippets all the time throughout the
day? As needed. Yeah, as needed. So I have quite a, I wouldn't say stressful job, but mm-hmm. I've got a lot.
But what pressure is there? This is a complex company.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, there's a lot to do. Yeah. So I use techniques to stay focused.
Yep.
And when I am in a state of anxiety, I'll use a technique to help myself get more present.
Okay, so how do you do that? What would you do?
Just focus on my breath. Just observe. Mm-hmm. If I'm in a state of high anxiety, I might use like a sense meditation. What do I taste, what do I smell, what do I hear, what do I see, just to bring me back into the present. Mm. And then, yeah, I also will use, because I'm a facilitator, I'll often teach people the techniques as well to help them.
Okay. What tells you that, you know, the difference between anxiety and high anxiety?
The inability to think or focus on anything but the whatever is the stress. Mm. And I think it's there's a sensation of heat in my head and a sensation of confusion. And it's been a while. And just that feeling of going around in circles as well. Yeah.
Okay. So when was the last time that you really felt high anxiety?
Last October, I was in Canada for a friend's wedding, and I was put in a very difficult situation, and I felt probably for the whole period that I was away, I felt anxiety on and off throughout the period.
Okay. And that was a period of how many days or?
2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was a unique situation, and one that I didn't have a lot of kind of control over. Yeah.
Right. And so this was in October last year.
Mm-hmm.
When was the one before this?
It would be, that period, maybe September or August, I was dealing with a very difficult stakeholder who was, her behaviour was quite bullying, and I woke up one morning and just didn't come to work for the day.
This was also in the same year, last year.
Same year, yeah.
Right. So, when you work, what would be the maximum number of hours that you can concentrate?
On one task or across the day?
You know, like you have a list of things to do and you work yourself one after the other without taking a break or without doing anything, then that would be for how long?
It depends. I can go for quite a long time concentrating. Yep. And I've had periods where I've gone hours and not noticed anything going on around me if I'm interested. Mm. 2 or 3 hours. And then in a work day, I can start my work day at 5 a.m. and go through until 7 or 8 with some breaks.
A.m. or p.m.? 5 a.m. to 7 or 8 a.m.?
P.m.
P.m.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
With micro breaks?
With breaks, yeah. Yeah, but on a...
like a washroom or that kind of a break, right?
Yeah.
Okay, So if you say put in a long day like 5 a.m. to 7 or 8 p.m., then how soon would you be able to come back to that same experience of working that long again?
The next day.
Okay, and then you would begin again at what time?
Look, that's pretty, that can be quite sustained over a period of time when we've got a lot of work on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been in situations where I've had to sustain that level of work for a few months.
Okay.
But I do tend to get to a point where I have to shut it down and remind myself.
Okay. Okay. But then you can do this for, say, 1 or 2 months or more than that, 3 months?
3 or 4 months.
4 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for 4 months, and you could work, say, from 5 a.m. to 7 or 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. with micro breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
then, so 8, and then next day mm-hmm. you go back to work again at the same time, or maybe 1 or 2 hours
yeah.
here or there.
Yeah.
So that would be less than 12-hour break.
Yeah. Yeah, we...
with the sleep,
during a
of
very
course.
Busy, very, very busy period.
Yeah, yeah that
yeah.
can happen.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not ideal, though.
Yeah. But then... that is what our work environment demands from us. So,
yeah.
Which is
yeah.
why it is relevant to the work environment around us.
Yes.
How much can we give of that?
Yeah.
So after this 4 months,
mm.
then how do you, then what do you do?
Look, I think, and I wouldn't say it's necessarily my work putting those demands on me.
Mm.
I tend to be... a workaholic by nature.
Mm-hmm.
So when I do find I've gotten to that point where I've been working too hard for too long, mm-hmm. over the same period of time, often I'll take time out and I'll go and have a retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll take some time off for a hike or something like that, but generally I need time away from work and time away from work doing kind of mindful activities.
Something which is not at all work related.
Yes, but also something that's not, I'm not someone who
something
goes
to
sit
do
on
with mindfulness.
Yeah, yeah, something.
Something.
Restorative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, okay, so when you do this kind of work, so is this work that you're doing, is this driven by passion or
yes.
by compulsion or something else?
I believe in my job. I believe in the work that I do
mm-hmm.
As well. So, and I tend to, when I have a problem to solve, I tend to turn it around in my mind a lot until I have a solution.
Right.
I'm not, my energy is not restored by things that I feel I have to do, I want to do it.
Okay.
And I'm lucky in my role, you know, I have a fair amount of discretion over what I do, because I've got a team who can do the things I don't want to do. So I tend to work hard, but love what I'm doing.
Tell me of a time, if you have ever faced a challenge that was really gripping.
Gripping as in
a challenge that, you know, was, you know, like you were really challenged.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I first came into this job, back in 2017, there was a lot of politics around it, and I had people demanding things of me which were, it was a lot of work, but it was also below my level of intelligence. So it was kind of do this, but don't think about it, and we'll tell you what to think. And for me, that was challenging because it was a lot of time, and I didn't see any real outcome being achieved. And so I had to challenge those people to think differently. And it took a lot of energy, it took a lot of time. But in the end, I was right. And what that then meant was, even though the outcome was good, because I got the opportunity to have mastery over the work that we were doing, it also meant that the support of those individuals was withdrawn, so I was really on my own. And so I had to then, you know, now that I had full discretion over my work, I had to achieve. And luckily we did. and we got really great results, quite public results as well. But it was incredibly taxing because of the political stuff that I had to work through. Again, it's, you know, dealing with those stakeholders I mentioned before, quite bullying. And I, you know, there was a lot of ego involved. And so, you know, the challenge for me wasn't necessarily the work, it was just the dealing with the emotional side of it.
Yep, yeah. And when you fell to this, you just went on for, say, for a few months.
Yeah.
More than a month. Say, what you're saying, around 6 months to a year almost, right?
More like 6 months.
If it was, say, around 6 months, did you at any point in time at that time, how did you ever feel like giving up? Did you ever feel like, no, this is just, you know, not productive, not helping me, let me move on?
No, not really. I'm pretty stubborn. I did feel emotional, and I don't feel that I always approached the problem in the right way, but I knew I was right, and I knew it was right, and I knew it was worth it, so I just kept pushing on.
So which means you had a certain amount of determination? And this determination, is this the first time that you ever had a challenge like this? Or, you know, previously, would you say that you have had same kind of challenges earlier? Or would you be able to speak about that?
Yeah. Look, I think definitely my nature is to be quite stubborn and resilient as well. I think working in a corporate environment, there are always politics and there's always ego. And hopefully I'm getting better at dealing with it. But I would say many times in my career I've encountered obstacles which are related to people and politics, and had to find a way to navigate through it. And hopefully I'm better at it than I was back then. I'd say probably the norm in a corporate environment rather than the exception.
Would there be any challenge that would be a cornerstone in your life? It can be in your personal life also, may not be work life.
I came from quite a... my hometown is... It's Bundaberg, which is in Queensland. It's regional. It's quite a racist and homophobic, and in a lot of ways not a safe place.
Okay.
So even though it's a country town, there's a biking bar in the street. I would say as a young person, I was sexually harassed quite a bit. And then I would say, you know, reflecting back to high school, I was definitely bullied in high school as well. So it was quite a, if you think in terms of the cornerstone, I think that learning to be, I would say the way that's impacted on my personality is I'm low trust. I don't necessarily warm up to people who are just, you know, they try and build a relationship by being nice or in your face. I actually find that really quite confronting. I'd much prefer for someone to take their time to, for want of a better term, to prove themselves to me before I trust them. And I can feel that I have to work very hard to be triggered when people are in my face a little bit. It goes back to when you showed me before and I said, social and lonely, I don't see that on a continuum. It's, you know, so social and, I don't know, happy. So I prefer Look, I prefer to take time, I think, to get to know people. And then on the other side, if I come across someone who, like me, is low trust, it takes a long time for us to find, build that relationship. Because we're both kind of standoffish.
Okay. So that would be the cornerstone. But then what? So you've moved from Bundaberg, from here.
Yeah, Bundaberg, Brisbane, Sydney, and then Melbourne.
All right.
Yeah.
And moved all the way. And this journey must have had quite a few, other challenges, but there must have been something that got you moving from there, moving on from that, rural area to Bundaberg is a rural area?
Yes.
All that?
Yeah.
So moving from that to here.
Yeah.
What was that?
Job opportunity. It's Bundaberg's it's a low socioeconomic area, it's the highest unemployment in Australia, and so I moved when I was 17 to Brisbane, lived there 10 years, moved from Brisbane to Sydney 2007, also for job opportunity, lived there for 7 years and then moved here for job opportunity as well. And
so all through this time, how did you manage yourself?
Look, I think meditation's always, that's helped, like since I was 21, so I was in Brisbane when I did my first meditation retreat. I think it helps build resilience. I think it's like my spiritual, not just meditation, but my spiritual beliefs help me to say, to maintain a sense of compassion, even if I physically don't, there's someone who's just joined my team who's one of those relationship builders, and she asked me a lot of personal questions. Just breathe. She's trying to build rapport. She doesn't know that I don't like this. So just reminding myself that even, for instance, something my parents used to say to me is you don't have to like everyone, but you have to love them. So having that compassion, empathy, even those people who I don't feel quite comfortable with at first, just reminding myself that it'll take some time. And that always happens as well, this will change.
Okay. So now that you've spoken of your parents, do you think of them as being part of that group of influence which has been strong, or how is it?
They're very, even though some of our beliefs are different, I would say they can be quite racist and homophobic, having come from that regional area. Yeah, and it's cognitive dissonance, right? Because they're extremely spiritual. Taught Sunday school, and don't see their homophobic beliefs as being misaligned. They're nearly 80 now, so I'm not going to change them. But I think the traditional upbringing that I had gave me a strong sense of values. I'm actually adopted, and I grew up with two foster sisters. And it's interesting to compare my birth family, and I've reconnected with my birth family on my mother's side. My mother has mental health issues, my brother and sister have mental health issues, and I think had I had grown up in that family, and I still think everyone's got mental health issues, right? I think that I would have gone the same way. None of them can hold down jobs, for instance. They think I'm rich because I have a job. Rich with credit card debt. But it's been interesting.
Maybe rich in some other way.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Nature versus nurture, right? So I'm more like them in certain ways. But because I had this very traditional Catholic upbringing, I feel that that's given me the structure to then succeed. But then if I compared myself to my two foster sisters, grew up in a similar environment, but came to our family later, they certainly haven't succeeded in the same physical sense of the word.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, long answer to a short question, but definitely had some influence.
Mm.
But also we're very different as well.
That's all we
say. Yeah.
And even if they're blood.
Yes.
A lot of difference.
Mm.
We are a joint family. Indian families are joint families. Mm. So I have two brothers who are, I've got two sisters. So two sisters are from my parents, and my brothers are from my uncles.
Mm.
So my uncle lived in Geneva.
Mm.
So these two brothers lived with us for some time before they shifted, relocated. Because my uncle he was in WHO, World Health Organization. Mm. So he moved to Philippines, and then from there he went to Geneva.
Mm.
So that whole part, the boys stayed with us.
Mm.
So I had four siblings before me.
Right, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And none of them meditate.
Right, okay. Yeah.
None of them.
Yeah.
They're not even spiritual.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
My two brothers, they don't believe in any kind of religion or spirituality.
Mm.
My two sisters, they do some kind of I call it a weird thing, which is totally, it's neither religion. Mm. I mean, they don't always follow all the rituals, but we are actually Theravada Buddhists.
Mm.
That is my family background. Mm. But they don't. I mean, they neither are Buddhists nor are they anything. So it's a real mix. But none of them have taken up meditation.
Mm.
Though my grandmother used to make us meditate.
Mm.
We were one of the better off families. Mm. So, you know, religious monks would come to our house, and those were all kind of things that used to continuously happen.
Mm.
You know, as you're saying for yourself, you know, you were rich.
Yes.
In that sense, my father and my uncle were rich, you know, compared to the rest of the community.
Mm.
So we would have lots of people coming to us, a lot of religious connotations, and how they take the religious thing into the social life.
Mm.
So that kind of thing.
Mm.
But none of them have.
Mm.
Whereas I remember from the age of 3, my grandmother used to look after us. So that's that.
Mm.
It's nothing to do with blood.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now that you're talking about, so this is actually there. So one thing that I can see is that your teacher, whoever taught you that meditation, was actually the person who influenced your life to move in a different, you know, as a person who's looking from, you know, from far. She's the one who actually turned it in that direction. So that is one. And two is, you have constantly used it. Now that you're speaking of, you know, have you been constantly using meditation that always, like you said, high anxiety, low anxiety, and then I would do some techniques. So do you do that because you know that that's going to help you? Is it a conscious thinking? Or is it something that unconsciously you slip into a meditation mode? Which one? How is it?
It's unconscious.
Okay.
Yeah, just automatically will move to breath if I need it. Yeah.
So the other question that comes up here is, suppose you were doing one work. And, you know, like, this is the ideal environment. Because in a complex environment, you get lots of jobs. And all of the jobs are equal priority, if you want to put it that way. At least the stakeholders want us to think that way. How do you deal with that?
How do I manage multiple priorities? I communicate with them and really come up with what's most important. I think of my boss's scorecard, for instance, and then make sure that my activities align to that and her boss's scorecard, etc. But generally that sense of prioritizing, I have a system that I use where every week I sit down and I look across the week, I look at what's important, make sure the most important work is scheduled in. And then on a day-to-day basis, it's really, because I've done that thinking, I can, you know, go to my desk, sit down, and know, what's most important.
Okay. You have a team?
Yes.
How many members?
7.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a 7-member team.
Mm-hmm.
And Did they all join at the same time? Or?
No.
Yeah. So who would be the oldest, or you know, the number of people who have known you, the maximum number of people?
Probably there would be two, Georgia, who's in New Zealand, Carol, who's in Manila.
Okay, so these two have known you for the longest period of time since you joined. What would they say about you?
Busy. They tend to say I take too much on. I develop people, so most of my staff say I don't know the word they say, it's like mold. I mold people, and I help them to improve and get better at their job.
And if they had to say anything negative about you, what would they say?
Take too much on. And probably I can be really direct as well. And I think, although not with them, because they're my team, so I look after them. The biggest piece of feedback is I take too much on.
Okay, so how do you see yourself as their manager or their leader? Yep. First of all, do you see yourself as a manager or a leader?
A bit of both, right? Because you need to lead, but there's a part of my job which is just managing people's time. I like to develop people. Like to empower them. We have this thing called, and it sounds terrible, but I call them my evil plans.
Okay.
So I come up with these crazy ideas of things that we can do. Like, I took a whole heap of people to the circus. Mm. Or recently we had, we went through this campaign, so managed your graduate program. I took resumes out of the process. Mm. So people have to play games to apply, there's no resume. I based a two-day development program on a David Bowie song. So it's, come up with this crazy idea and get them around it. There's an Indigenous thing that I'm doing, looking at the moment. So I think when I first started working with them and I came up with the ideas, their response was, what the heck are you talking about? But as we've worked together and these crazy ideas have pulled off, then like they have more faith. Mm. And it's not hard at all to get them to jump on board. Mm. So I think, and that's, they just used to the crazy.
Okay,
yeah.
So now that you're talking about crazy ideas, so first of all, how long do these crazy ideas remain, egg in your head, and then you start fructifying it?
I kind of think like a diamond. So I'll see something from this crazy idea. Okay, or how does that look in terms of what we're trying to achieve? How would that look from a process? Why would we do that? How would people experience that? So I tend to kind of think all of that at once, and it will click very quickly if it has legs. If it doesn't have legs, I'll just let it go.
Mm.
But I don't tend to generate a stack of ideas. I'll get an idea, it has legs, then I'll share it with the team and then we'll work on it.
Mm.
But it will be sustained effort over time. So my ideas now, I expect to pay off in 12 months' time.
Mm.
So it's not just about coming up with the flash in the pan. It's come up with the idea and then we incrementally work on it until it pulls off.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And while you're doing this, so what sustains you? Because the idea is out of your head.
Keeping the vision. Yeah. Being able to see it. And the next step from that as a leader is being able to explain it and so that they I'm creating that shared clarity so that they can see what it is we're trying to achieve, which sometimes takes a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But because we've mostly worked together for a long time, they have more faith when I come up with this crazy idea, even if they can't see it. They've gotten used to, okay, well, that other thing that she said worked and that other thing she said worked, so let's just give it a go.
How would your boss perceive you?
I think I'm known for being a bit different and seeing things differently, and I tend to be quite future focused, and I tend to challenge in a nice way, challenge people to think differently. I think she'd find me to be quite casual because she's very formal, and so I think that challenges her because I do tend to be kind of not as formal as she's probably used to as quite a senior person.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of try and manage my style so I'm less casual around her as well. So we're both trying. I'm not sure we'll ever be best friends, but we respect each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a work relationship, do you think respect is more important than being liked?
I like to be liked, but I think it's definitely, going back to what I said before, it doesn't matter if you like me if I'm not getting results.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's easier to influence people if they like you.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you always know that you're going to do this kind of work? I mean, when did this career path come into you?
It just evolved. I got into recruitment, so I started my family quite young, paid well, continued on. I found that I really like coaching, developing people.
Mm-hmm.
This job came out of the blue. It ended up being the perfect job for me because it's a combination of recruitment and development.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has evolved with me. I've been here just nearly 2 years. Mm-hmm. And the role has changed based on my skill set and what I like to do. And luckily, the things I wanted to do, no one else wanted to do, so so they came along.
Okay, yeah. So recently in LinkedIn, I was seeing some positions. Are they for your team?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that for talent acquisition, but at the same time, it had, developing the person and then doing... Because that was the role I was doing 10 years ago.
Okay,
see. I was like, after a long time, I'm seeing a same kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Because the role that I played at talent acquisition back in with Wipro, I was not doing only just just putting people in place. I was working with the senior people, of course, but we had to look at the talent management and how to develop them and how well they'll fit in, and not look at now, but 10 years down the line, where exactly will they be? And how do we develop their career? So I was like, wow, I said, this description really matters.
It's
full circle.
Yeah,
full circle, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so having said this, what I understand from what you're saying, what time?
Yeah, I think we can go for another half an hour.
Okay,
yep.
Great. Okay, so with what you've been saying so far, I get that you've actually, to some extent, let life lead you to do whatever it made you do, but at the same time, you did try to make the best of what life gave you.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, in this whole process, you said that your parents, I'm trying to summarize so that I get to the next question. Your parents were one of the people who influenced.
Yep.
I could see that your teacher also influenced.
Yep.
And do you have any more influences like these?
My grandmother, who was my father's mother, who was probably more influenced because I admired her, just her way. She's very, she's one of those people who speaks quietly when they're angry and scares the hell out of you, that tone. But she was a lady, and she's You know, she had 6 children, born in the 20s, went through a war, had a husband died, so I just admired her strength. Meditation teacher. And then I think it would be, I feel that a lot of my influence came through, you know, reading books and that type of thing, rather than actual people, perhaps. Uh-huh. And also leaders. People have managed me and have been generous as leaders. Mm-hmm. And then I try and, you know, pay that forward as well. On the meditation side, yeah, I think just Vipassana, that whole, all of those teachings, I've been to, I think, about 10 Vipassana meditation retreats.
So how many days are these retreats for?
10 days, yeah.
And do you have to keep quiet the whole time and all that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, most of the time. Yeah. But that for me is almost like, that's foundational for me. And I guess I grew up in that kind of Christian environment, but then having that, the Vipassana teachings there, you know, it fits any kind of spiritual practice.
Yep.
I think it's kind of just bringing those together, but then having an opportunity to learn other kind of sets of beliefs and religions. It's almost like that mountain where the water flows down to the bottom and just goes through different creeks or rivers or whatever you'd say. Mm. So
makes its own path.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So I feel like I've had the opportunity when I've met people or I've learned different ways of thinking that I've been able to bring it together in a way that makes sense to me.
What is your greatest ability?
I can understand complex problems, and I can break them down in a really simple way so that I can explain that to people and I can solve problems.
And is that what you do in your personal as well as work life, or just work life?
I probably check my brain at the door when I go home. Yeah. I think, although I'm lucky, we've got a lovely home and a nice life, and my son is, you know, in uni, so good values, so probably. Just, I don't spend as much time worrying about it.
Okay. Okay, so since you say that you have a child, has meditation influenced, your practice of meditation influenced him?
Yep. Yeah, he's been to Vipassana.
Okay.
He's volunteered. He describes himself as an atheist, but he has just strong values and he understands. I don't know if he'd also describe himself as living a Buddhist way of life, but he knows the stories. And as compared to my husband, who hasn't been to Vipassana, Tyler and I have that shared understanding of that path. And as he grew up, the way that I would help him with his various challenges to share stories with him. And they would largely be Vipassana inspired stories to help him look at things in a different way. So, and I think, yeah, he does meditate. He calls me every now and then when he needs me to, you know, talk him down off a ledge or whatever. It's what uni students go through, the series of highs.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, he's, I often reflect when he was young and he'd wake up and mummy would be sitting like by the back door meditating. He just took that as that's our way of life. And don't bother mum until after she's finished meditating. Yeah.
Okay. And so when Now I've come to the part where what I'm trying to get from you, when I spoke about the number of hours that you concentrated, and after that, how much time you would take to go back, I'm looking at your flow, or you know, the how you can concentrate for a long period of time.
Yep.
And
yep.
And how does it drive you in the meantime? What are the breaks you take? So flow is taken as that kind of mental state where you are highly productive, and you will, what you just said, you would lose your world around you.
Look, 1 to 2 hours. I tend to be a slower paced person where I can focus on work for a set period, a longer period of time. I struggle with concentration in some of the meetings that we have to attend. So it's, I've tended prior to coming into this job to be some of a longer concentration span, it tends to be slower and more structured. But the role that I'm in at the moment has just, it's so much and it's so big, and so my concentration is shorter than it used to be.
The span?
Yes. And probably my patience is shorter than it used to be, because like every minute I've got I've kind of ticking in my head is how much money this is costing, or you know, how much time this is costing. And then those long meetings, I think I lose concentration because sometimes they're just not well run.
Sometimes they're just unproductive and they're just going on and on.
And I tend to be more kind of, let's get to the point, get this done.
Can I ask you something?
That's not me telling you, but
that's
how
it works. Do you face intellectual loneliness?
I don't know if it's intellectual or it's spiritual, because as I know, I see the world differently. And I think it's not socially acceptable to share that. My husband knows how I see the world. My son knows a little bit, but I don't tend to overshare the way that I see and experience things. Whether that's, I don't necessarily see it as loneliness. See it as, you know, people would think they would know I'm crazy versus think I'm crazy if I share the way I see it. Intellectually, I often get people saying they want to pick my brain, or can we use your brain, and which is nice in a way. Sometimes I find it a little bit taxing, because when you spend such a long sustained period of people just picking your brain, I get to the point where I'm a bit exhausted and I just want to be more than a brain. Maybe they can notice that I'm pretty as well.
Too many pickings of your brain.
Yeah,
I think it's time.
Yeah.
I think it's time. Yeah, it's 12:25.
Oh, I've got until, when is, I think my next meeting's at 1 if you need to.
But you wanted to prepare
yourself? Oh, no, it's okay. I'm okay. As long as I can move. Okay. I've got until 12:45.
Okay, so let's try. And so this flow that you said, you know, that it takes you time to sort of get into it, but then once you are into it, because of the concentration spans, and especially now, because you know, you have to sort of put yourself in various places, then how do you sustain your basic mental state?
I always go back to breath.
Okay.
You know, when I'm trying to focus and I'm trying to shut people out or noise out, I just take myself back to my awareness and my breath, and it's like I reset. This is the moment, this is what I'm doing. This is my focus.
So which means in a day you could actually be meditating for say 5 to 10 minutes multiple number of times.
And the foundation is starting the day with meditation, so I can go back to that anytime I want.
And end of the day, do you do it again?
I do. It's less intentional. It's just how I get to sleep.
Yep.
Basically. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's observing my observing sensation from top to bottom. Basically.
Okay. You mentioned last year, from August onwards, you had work pressure, and then you had a personal pressure.
Yeah.
Right. And this is practically ongoing. So it's 2 weeks of that, and August and. So during this period, you said you were in an uncomfortable situation, and it was not something. Let's say it was altogether negative atmosphere.
Yes. Okay? Yeah.
So you put it that way. How did you manage yourself?
I think, I could have done a better job of managing myself. I think when I got to the end of that holiday in October, I realised that something needed to change, and other people didn't change, I had to change. Mm-hmm. So it was a period of just letting go and realising that I had started reacting to stuff that wasn't necessary. No one's going to die. Touch wood. So it was almost like this. People in my team called it Zen Shalina. I just zened out, let it go, and actively did so. I probably went back to yoga and stuff like that, but it was really, for me, it was just a mental resetting and making a very active decision.
Conscious.
Yeah, not to get so attached to stuff that wasn't important.
Yeah. Okay. And when you came back, were you able to get back to work immediately?
Yeah, I came back to work straight away. But I wasn't relaxed because I'd had this stressful holiday. And that's when I actively just...
Oh, that's when you started.
Yeah. Actively tried to let go, actively. And shared it with the people around me. Shared the experience that I'd had. Booked another holiday for December, which was much better.
Okay.
But was really conscious about not continuing in the way that I had been continuing.
Mm.
And the people didn't change. In a lot of ways, some of the people were worse. But that's then I had to change myself.
And this conscious decision of yours, did you take it by yourself, or did you have a psychologist helping you? Or
no, I did it myself.
Have you ever taken the help of a psychologist?
We had a young man pass away who was in the grad program, so I consulted a psychologist then, but that was more from a how do I help these young people going through this experience.
Okay.
Mm. If I need counselling, I tend to seek out spiritual counselling versus a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the point of I see things differently than most people, I tend to find I need more spiritual help than the science.
Mm.
So it's been a long time, but if I really needed assistance, that's where I'd seek it.
So what do you mean by spiritual counselling?
Maybe a spiritual healer or someone someone who understands there's a different world for me in terms of the way I see things.
And so this period of, when you had to let go and all that went on for how long?
I think consciously trying to let things go, probably between when I got back in October and when I went on my next holiday, which was not until December, went to Japan. I think I was still I got to that Zen place, but I still had to, almost like I still had stuff to let go. So it was quite a difficult situation in Canada, and I still had to kind of move on and forgive people.
So you, some time back, you said that you unconsciously slipped into, into your meditation, which was not happening then.
I probably just needed
More effort,
more intervention.
Yeah.
And likewise, it was a very, I think it was a very difficult situation that I was in as well, and probably needed more support as well.
But you could understand that you needed more support, and this is more than what you do on a daily basis.
Yes.
You understood that.
Yeah. But, you know, I was in a different country.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So the external environment was different.
Yes.
As you said, it was not controlled. You could not control it.
No.
Okay. So now I am actually trying to ask you these questions because I'm trying to understand grit.
Mm.
Grit is an, it's an incognitive. So that's where I'm coming from, and I'm trying to get as to how much of taking can you take to be able to remain who you are.
Because grit's really about perseverance, isn't it?
But it's also about passion. It's also about wanting to do what you want to do.
There's a term my husband and I use to keep moving forward.
Yep.
And I think that's probably for me, even though it's challenging, I can see where we're heading, I understand the purpose, and I just, even if I slow down, I keep moving it forward. So during that period, even during that difficult time in Canada, even in the August, September, it was just, you know, do what you can, look for what you can control. But then I think from an emotional point of view, I think where I've been more successful this year is I've let things unfold more rather than trying to force them. And it's that difference between intuition and ego. You asked before about, you know, how I know a good idea is a good idea, because it's driven by intuition, not ego. It's not about fear or wanting to impress anyone. It's about being purposeful in our efforts, knowing what we want to achieve and who we want to achieve it for. And then the good ideas come, and they're really clearly, you know, good ideas versus a reaction to something. And so I guess that perseverance comes from always understanding what the North Star is and keeping that insight, even when, you know, the circumstance at the time may be challenging.
Okay. Which means, in a way, what you spoke some time ago, you know, like you align to your boss's and goals or whatever.
Yes.
She aligns to her boss's
goals. Yeah. Just working for ANZ, while ANZ is a bank, it's a purpose-led organisation. And my part of the puzzle is, you know, early talent, diversity, you know, it's all kind of the good stuff. Don't have to deal with the finances. So I feel incredibly lucky to work here. When I walk in every day, I know my overall goal is purpose-led. And I think the flip side of that is I wouldn't work for an organisation I didn't feel about a sense of purpose. I wouldn't be motivated. And none of this other stuff would come into place.
This gives another question as to what would be your motivations?
To work here or?
In life.
It's helping people. And helping people to be productive and happy. What really aligns me in this job is the Indigenous aspect of my role. It's only a small part of my role, but that would be something that is really important to me. Our latest evil plan is to help a community in the Northern Territory to help children in that community get through school. So that's, it's the, you know, actually making a difference. And I've got a lot of different things that I work on, but I get to make a difference in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just incrementally, but by the end of the year, you can see where, you know, we've got 200 graduates on our program, I can see where I've influenced them. We hired 100 Indigenous employees this year. So how do we hire 130 next year? So it's all helping people.
Okay. So when you were not working with NZ, this helping people, how did you do that? How did you implement that?
I do some coaching on the side.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to help my son, help my husband. I'm not doing a lot of charity work at the moment, but in previous years I also had a commitment to do charity work. Not so much anymore, but I feel like I do a lot of that at work anyway, so it's less so I have to do my job and then. So it's still helping people in some kind of form, helping my friends, for instance.
And how do you feel when you help them?
Good. Feel good about myself. It just feels good to see the change from, you know, when you start working with someone to when they roll off a program or go off and do their own thing, seeing them develop, seeing someone get a job. You know, that it's a young man who I've been coaching this year, and he just got a promotion 2 weeks ago. I've been pushing him this whole time to get that promotion.
Mm.
And seeing that, and now seeing him in that role, I just really enjoy.
So you like that fact that it worked out for somebody else, what he had actually foreseen?
Yes, yeah, I could see it. And I helped him to get there as well.
Okay. How do you know? What do you feel when you're challenged? And how do you know that, okay, this is a challenge?
Depends if it's a good challenge or it's a bad challenge.
It doesn't matter, whichever.
Yeah, a good challenge, I feel inspired and motivated and I feel engaged.
Mm-hmm.
A bad challenge, I feel emotional and I can feel the temperature rising. And I can feel the physical reaction that I have to it.
Okay. And how can you differentiate between good and bad? Because of these feelings you get that you know that?
Yeah. Yeah, I can feel if it's intuition or if it's a trigger. And it's an ego thing. Like this poor young woman who's just trying to be friends with me, like, woman, back off, stop asking me personal questions. The poor thing, I can see that she's like, you're so nice to everyone else, why are you nice to me? I'm like, give it 12 months.
Because you can already foresee what it's going to be like.
How dare you ask me what I did on the weekend?
I think it's a normal thing to ask, you know. Yeah. Some people just don't think before
I know,
they
she's
ask.
Trying her best. She's trying her best.
She's just asking because she's been given a, you know, like the norm, the environment says, you can ask these questions. So how are you feeling? What did you do for the weekend?
Yeah.
How was it? How was your weekend?
Yes.
She's just asking those questions. But she's not thinking.
I'm sorry for her.
But coming back to you, say you were in that woman's position, what would you do?
I would read the signs and back off. Generally what I do when I am, when I first meet someone, small talk. If they respond to small talk, then I know that they're more relationship-based. If they shut it down, then I know that they're more outcome-based. So I just focus on that. So you test the water, and then...
So I think we both were straight into outcome.
Yeah. That's fine. Works for me.
You know, because of your time, I had to keep in mind. Can't do that.
Can't
do small talk here. All right. Okay, so... The other question that comes up here is...
I've just set up a meeting with a friend
You spoke
yeah,
about
it. Yeah.
Do you want to come?
Sorry.
In? Yeah. I might see a bit
of it. It's okay. It's all right. So, when you have people... Okay, let's go to the other one.
And I spoke to Emma as well. She said...
Like you said, that this woman is bothering you. And she's not able to even get it.
But
you're trying to tell her. And do you usually always, sort of say, okay, fine, give her time, it'll be okay? Or is that always the case? Or when did that start happening?
Look, I can always feel when I'm triggered, and I try to just stop, observe, and like my natural reaction might be to be rude or shut someone down, so I just counter that. I'm very polite. until I feel comfortable, I'll just keep it as professional as possible and polite, and try and make sure that person isn't too impacted by it. When it comes to someone that I manage, I tend to just be very clear. This is what success looks like. These are my expectations. And give them feedback as well.
So which means what I'm getting here is communication is one of your biggest assets that you have, and you constantly use it all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
We've got 2 more minutes.
Okay, if you have 2 more minutes, then you get to do this. I would rather have you do this. Did you have any physical discomfort when you were to join the interview? No.
No, that's fine.
Who were you with? By yourself?
By myself, yeah.
Yes, okay. And now about the interview. How did you feel about the activity?
Yeah, it was fine.
So your skills in the activity, you can say low to high?
7.
Okay, and not at all to very much. Was this activity important for you?
Well, it's important for you.
Is it very important for me?
I'll go halfway.
Okay. Was this activity important to others? Yes, of course, to me.
Yes, there you go.
And were you succeeding at what you were doing? I think so.
Oh, good. Excellent. Yeah.
Do you wish you had been doing something else?
I was fine.
Okay, all right.
Fine.
So that you need to say.
Yeah.
Were you satisfied with how you were doing?
Yes, I wasn't really judging myself.
Okay,
so, yeah,
that's fine. How important was this activity in relation to your overall goals?
I believe in meditation. I'd like to think I'm helping someone somehow.
Definitely helping. And who would you be with if you had a choice?
Always with my husband and my son. You know, the people that I like to hang out with the most.
And what would you be doing?
Sitting on my deck at home having a cup of tea.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. I won't take any more of your time. What I will do after this is, having gone through this, I will either, if we can't meet, I understand.
Yep.
I also have understood that only over the weekends you're able to look at your email.
Right.
So,
okay.
What I'm going to do is, I might have some questions.
Sure.
I'll type them out to you.
Okay.
And you reply to it.
Okay.
So that way, it's fine.
Yes.
You can take your time.
Yep.
And at the same time,